Katie Thomas is on the phone line, the investigative healthcare reporter at the New York Times, whose voice I heard in a podcast where they talked not about human healthcare, which I presume, Katie, is what you normally report on, but veterinary care. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, are you a Chicagoan these days?
I do. Yes, I live in Chicago. I mentioned that in the podcast.
I noticed that. And so you're probably not too far from where I'm sitting on Wacker Drive, just a little bit south of the river and not too far from the lake. So you normally cover health care, and I presume not veterinary care.
That's right. Yep. I'm normally a health care reporter.
How did you fall into reporting this story then?
A couple of years ago, I had a dog that got sick, and as I started kind of navigating his care, as always, I kind of always wear my reporter hat wherever I go, and so I just started getting curious about how much veterinary care has changed in the last couple of years. And on the one hand, it's become incredibly sophisticated, and it's really amazing all of the things that we can do now for our dogs and our cats when they get sick. There's just so many more options that are available. But at the same time, it's also gotten really, really expensive. And I got interested in that because it seemed like there were a lot of the same themes that I was seeing as I covered in healthcare that were actually coming to the veterinary world.
What are some of those themes?
So one of the interesting ones is basically the kind of corporate acquisition of veterinary clinics. There's a big player, Mars, which, most of us know is selling candy or dog food. And they're actually really big in the vet space. They own big chains like VCA, and, they've bought up a specialty chain called Blue Pearl. And then also private equity backed chains are buying up a lot of individual veterinary clinics. And so today we have estimates that about a quarter of all like primary care clinics are owned by corporations, and then three quarters of specialty or in emergency room hospitals are owned by companies. And so, that's just changed some of the practices, that you see in these clinics.
Just because they're corporate-owned, though, doesn't necessarily mean that the cost has to go up. I suppose they could argue that, there's economies of scale and we're able to offer services at a lower cost. But that's not happening.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And, there are lots of benefits of a corporate, practice. Like you said, economies of scale. You can make sure that the expertise is at the right level across your chain. Maybe you can invest in some like big machinery and, kind of nice equipment. So there's definitely benefits to it. But what I spoke to a number of veterinarians who had worked in some of these corporate offices, and what they told me was that, they just felt increasing pressure to bring up their revenues. A veterinarian salary, for the most part, many veterinarian salaries is actually tied to how much money they bring in, how much revenue they bring into the office. And so, one vet I spoke to said that, she was told her cost per client was not high enough, and she had to bring that up. They just felt pressure to do tests and kind of order up unnecessary, things in order to bring in revenue, not necessarily always in the best interest of the pet.
Yeah, I suppose that does mirror maybe what human beings are going through with their physicians. But every veterinarian that my family has encountered seemed to be the most compassionate and conscientious person. I suspect your experience was similar.
Oh, absolutely. I have had nothing but wonderful experience with all of the vets that I've ever dealt with. And, in speaking to these vets for the story, this really kind of tortured them. It keeps them up at night. And they also cited some of these vets as well, other factors for why prices are going up. Like I said, now it's just the level of care is so much higher these days, right? We can get, chemotherapy for our dogs when they get cancer. We can give them MRIs to figure out what's going on with them. So that's driving up costs. And also, just like in human healthcare, we're seeing pharmaceutical drugs, drugs, vaccine costs, other things going up. And also, veterinarians don't get paid a lot of money. They get paid a lot less than your average human doctor. So, for most veterinarians, this is really a passion of theirs, and they're really kind of pained by some of these prices.
And pained by the outcome when they have to put a pet down. I've heard from,
absolutely.
I knew anecdotally that the suicide rate in that profession is higher than one might expect, and heard from some people whose spouses were in that business, and they said it's a real crisis for some of these people who have to deal with the trauma of pets passing away.
Yeah, I learned, as well from talking to these vets, it's a real, it's a challenging profession. You know, these are very empathetic people, and our animals have shorter lifespans than we do. And so they're dealing with death, on a day-to-day basis in a way that most of us are not.
But back to the cost now, I always attributed it of late anyway. My thought was that just the services are so sophisticated. Like you said, if the dog has cancer, we can get chemo. There's dialysis. If the dog blows a knee out, we can replace ligaments. And the costs for that are extraordinary, but it can be done. That's got to be a large part of it these days, huh?
I think it's all of the above. I think it's that, but also, I heard from many, we asked owners to kind of, pet owners to submit their bills to us and tell us their stories. And also from talking to veterinarians, sometimes even basic lab tests have gone up in price. So like I said, it's all of those things. It's that we can do so many more extensive and expensive things for our pets, but also that some of the more basic services have also gone up significantly in price. As I said in my story, the veterinary costs have gone up 60%, which over the last decade, which far outpaces inflation. And we know inflation, is something everyone's dealing with. It's gone up even faster in the veterinary world.
So what are some examples when you asked readers, send us your bill, tell us about your veterinary bill. Give me some stories or tell me what you saw.
Sure. I'm trying to think of a representative one. One thing is that it really varied. People shared all sorts of stories with me. I spoke to this one woman who lived in Georgia, and her dog was having seizures, and she took him in to the vet. He got an MRI scan. Again, something that maybe wasn't available 2 decades ago. And just to kind of figure out what was wrong, it cost her $2,000. It turned out the dog had brain cancer and it wasn't treatable. But she put that on a credit card, and it's something she's still paying off. It was several years ago. I talked to several pet owners who, kind of to the point that you're speaking of, they knowingly and very, with a lot of compassion, decided to take these kind of extreme measures for their pets. So I don't think that they're blaming anyone, for that. They made that choice. And yet, they had to tap into retirement accounts to pay things off. This one woman I spoke to donated blood plasma. Someone else took a second job. They're going to pretty extreme lengths to kind of pay these bills because one big difference between human health care and veterinary care is only a tiny minority of pet owners have pet insurance. So most of this has to be paid off, in full, either cash or put it on a credit card or something like that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, about pet insurance also. You also told the story of Roscoe and Gambit, a couple of pets, mm-hmm. one a dog, one a horse, owned by a veterinary technician, as it turns out. Each animal, you wrote, had medical emergencies, resulting in bills that totaled more than $13,000. And it sounds like the procedures saved the pets, but now she had to take a higher-paying job, maxed out a credit card, mm-hmm. tapped into her husband's retirement account. And I wonder if one of the reasons bills are higher these days is because people are willing to pay more these days. I suspect that my parents would not have paid $10,000 or the equivalent of to save their pets, but we do that for ours. I wonder if our relationship with our pets is different than it used to be.
Yes, and I talk to vets and owners alike about this, and I think there's even been some studies about it. we increasingly, I think people have always felt like, to a certain extent, animals are a part of our family, but they're closer and they're in the more inner circle now.
Yeah.
You know, we celebrate their birthdays. I saw one study that half of all Americans sleep with a pet in their bed. You know, we love them, and we kind of, we go to lengths for them that perhaps we wouldn't have a generation ago. That's for sure.
What's the deal with pet insurance? Is that a good investment? Should I get some?
It's so complicated and so specific to individual people's like financial situations that I don't know if it's universally a good idea, but I think it can be a really good option. The thing is that it's like, imagine getting health insurance before Obamacare existed, right? So pet insurance, typically, for example, it won't cover anything that a pet has that's a pre-existing condition. Like if they had cancer before and then you sign them up for pet insurance, they're not going to cover that cancer. Similarly, you know, you're going to pay more if you have an older dog. And there's limitations. There's sometimes, depending on the plan, there's a maximum payout that they'll, you know, they will pay, things like that, that, you know, now that's not allowed generally on the human healthcare side, but that's kind of the state of things with pet insurance. So, you know, I think it really can be helpful, especially if, perhaps if you have a younger dog and you're trying to kind of protect against a really catastrophic situation and having to, you know, say your dog got hit by a car or something, you want to be able to cover that. It can be a really good option, but you really need to read the fine print and just understand what it will and what it won't cover.
My wife and I were just talking about some people after we first discovered your story, and some people can afford it. You know, a guy called into our show and he was out $12,000. He got a call. He was out with his wife at dinner. And after four nights in emergency care, the veterinary office called and said, you owe us $8,000. You're not going to get your pet back until we get the money. I guess he didn't pay up front because they didn't know what it was going to be. And then there was an additional $4,000 worth of treatment. He had no regrets about paying $12,000 to give his dog a few more years of life. But he also said, I can afford it. And what my wife and I were talking about were people we know who can't and still do. And that's, I don't know what the end of this sentence is. I mean, that's yeah. a tough situation, isn't it?
It is. And I spoke to, you know, some people, and I've actually gotten emails too from people who have worked in shelters, for example, and rescue organizations. And, you know, sadly, a lot of people have to, you know, they have to relinquish pets when they can't afford the veterinary care. So, I mean, I think everyone I spoke to agreed this is a pretty unsustainable situation. You know, it's wonderful that animals can get the care that they can and that we have such state-of-the-art medical care for animals. And at the same time, you know, many, many people can't afford this. And so, you know, something's got to give.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what the Obamacare equivalent would be for pets. And I don't know that we should have the equivalent affordable care for pets. If you get a pet, that's kind of on you. They're not human beings. Like, you know, I see both sides of this, but it's just tantalizing. It must be for people when they say, well, there's a neurologist who specializes in your breed and they may be able to treat it. And now what are you going to do? You know, that's a $5,000 decision. And it's written about, among other things, in The Costs of Caring for Pets in the New York Times. Katie Thomas writing about that. Katie, I'm out of time, but really interesting talking to you and reading you and hearing you. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
About our guest just a minute ago, Katie Thomas, the Chicago-based reporter on healthcare for the New York Times, who took her dog to the vet and went, wow, I need to report about this. John, you think Mars buys vet clinics because they have compassion for animals? Revenues used to pay staff at clinics. Now Mars wants profits. It's not just your trusted vet in your pocket, but Mars is in there too. Of course it costs more to take your pets in. I've been a certified veterinary tech for 43 years, and I love my job and my boss, an independent clinic owner. But corporate ownership is unfortunate. Hey, John, I took my cat to the vet last week. Bill was over $500, $815. An MRI for a dog is now $6,000 to $8,000. 914. The cost of veterinary school is humongous. These are dedicated, caring people who become vets. No argument for me. I believe that in order to be a veterinarian, a doctor of veterinary medicine, you have to go to med school as long as somebody who takes care of human beings. Yeah, it's expensive. John, that reporter's right. The costs are unsustainable. And 630 said, I'm 73 and have been surrounded my entire life with pets. Our pets have always been treated like members of the family. My last animal passed away a year ago from old age, and for the first time, I do not have an animal family member. I cannot in good conscience take on the financial responsibility that is required in this day and age, and it leaves a huge hole in my heart. But the basic prices for good care are outrageous. What a conscientious person that is. Isn't that a true way to look at it? You know, if you're 73, if you're limited income, if you're single, you want a pet, maybe you don't have the resources, and now you think, I can't afford to have a dog. Or at least not one in good conscience, because they'll say, well, the dog's not acting well. We'll bring her in. That'll cost $1,000. Wasn't there a woman, Pete, who called in? We were talking about this last week, and she said on her Social Security, she could not afford to pay her vet bill. And I said, when I get to be king, there will be a solution to this, but I don't know what it is.